I wasn't too sure about this crematorium idea, Cutper said, but I must admit it seems to have come off rather well. Though the warlord might have preferred a better souvenir than several kilograms of ashes.
Dr. Gass nodded. But I think he'll be pleased that they didn't just die, that they died very, very painfully.
The explosion hit before Face heard it, before he comprehended it. His shoulder hit the grid, and he felt the flooring burn through his light tunic, branding him. He continued to roll, and the burning sensation tore down his back across his buttocks. The flames on the walls were now growing, extending toward him. But in the center of them, there was a different sort of light. Whiteness, not redness. He lurched toward it. He leaped over the edge into the white void beyond and hit something. White, cold hardness. He bounced off it and landed on his back. And then the pain from his burns hit him. His back arched and he shrieked. His body would not obey him, would do nothing but writhe and shout. Face forced himself to look around. He was in a hallway. There to his right lay Dia. She was moving, her eyes half open. Beyond her was a jagged hole in a once pristine white wall, and it was lined in flames. Heat rolled out of it, a steady wind from a man-made hell. Out from the fire shot Wes Jansen, crashing into the same wall Face must have hit. His right shoulder and back were on fire. He dropped to the floor and rolled, swatting at the flames. Then came Tyria. She landed short of the wall, her blaster rifle in hand. Four out, four to go. Face heaved himself to his feet and began dragging Dia out of the path of oncoming wraiths. Seconds later, Kel landed where she had just been. His hair was charred and his eyebrows were gone, singed away. Piggy came flying out of the inferno and crashed into the wall. He bounced off and slammed to the floor. A fraction of a second later, Shala landed atop him. Seven of eight. The wraiths looked at one another as in their pained and distracted states, they tried to calculate who was missing. Oh, no, Kel said. Runt. Then Runt was among them, his chest and left side fully engaged in flame, his fur blackening away as it fed the fire. Piggy fell atop Runt, hammering away at patches of flame his corpulent body didn't smother. They just stood there, breathing for a moment. Then Face straightened, despite what it cost him in agony to his back. When he spoke, he found that his voice cracked with pain and exertion.
We're moving out, he said. There have to be access panels or stairs nearby.
No rules, no mercy. Take out anything that gets between us and home. From the looks on the wraith's faces, he knew they'd have accepted no other order. Normally, taking news to the warlord didn't cause General Melvar's stomach to host some sort of internal dogfight, but sometimes the news was bad, such as now. Word from Savalori, Melvar set a datapad before the warlord. There was a raid on Binring Biomedical about 13 hours ago. As far as we can determine, it was by the wraiths.
Were they killed?
No.
Were any of them killed?
We don't think so. Survivors on the site think some of them were injured. Zinge's jaw clenched. Then he forced himself to relax. Go on. They had Rogue Squadron with them, apparently flying support. They blew up the research center.
And what does Dr. Gast have to say for herself?
They took her. Zinge went absolutely still. Melvar waited, watching. But the man did not blink for long moments. Zinge rose, slamming his chair into the wall behind him.
They took her? Alive?
Apparently. One of three stormtroopers who survived the bombing witnessed the Gamorrean pilot capturing her. Her body hasn't been found. Zinge made an inarticulate noise of anger.
They took her? She knows all about Shuba. She knows all too much about Minefield.
Zinge was shaking. His voice was raw.
Well, we can't have this. Activate our man on Mon Ramonda. Tell him to kill Dr. Gast if he sees her. Whether or not she's there, tell him to kill his primary targets. And put Project Funeral on full speed ahead.
Gailey was a massive man, all chest and muscle. His hair was red and shaggy, and his expression perpetually quizzical, as though he didn't ever quite understand what was going on around him. Which wasn't the case. He understood his job well enough, programming menus for the cafeteria and officers' conferences and briefings. But the job didn't pay well and offered little respect. So he was very attentive on his last leave on Coruscant, when the men with intelligent eyes came to him and offered him a lot of money. And now he was supposed to kill somebody. Somebody important. It would take skill and knowledge. So it pleased him that he had figured out just what the various requests for refreshments actually meant. They were like a code, and he had cracked it. Pilot briefings call for caff, but if a request included both sweet pastries and meat rolls, it meant there would be a mission. So, when the request came in this morning, he knew he had his opportunity to earn all that money. Gailey delivered the cart of refreshments to the pilot's main briefing amphitheater and then loitered out in the hall. Soon enough, the pilots of Munramanda's four starfighter squadrons began filing in. He waved at the huge rogue, Taldira the Twi'lek. "Lieutenant, can I have a moment?" Taldira frowned at this odd request.
"Well," he said, "only a moment. The briefing is about to start. You're Callie, aren't you?"
"Gailey. And I have an important message for you." He beckoned Taldira and walked around the nearest corner. "Here's what it says. Wedge Antilles hops on one transparisteel leg."
Taldira rocked back on his heels, his expression shocked. He gripped his head as though to restrain some explosive force within it.
"I hate that."
"Me too. We all do."
Taldira stood upright again with a new look in his eyes.
"But I can put a stop to it."
"And you should. But wait until after the meeting. Then you can do it in an X-wing."
"You're right."
Taldira nodded briskly and turned back toward the briefing amphitheater. "For the last few hours," Wedge told his pilots, "we've been in hyperspace en route to the Josaphet system. Earlier today, Josaphet 4 sent out a distress call to the Empire talking about a full-scale invasion by Raptors, Zinj's elite troops. A Duros ship approaching the system to do some under-the-table trading heard the transmission and relayed it to the New Republic. We're going in to stomp on the Raptors, and hopefully Iron Fist, as well as to do some good for the people of Josaphet."
Corin Horn raised a hand. "And what are the odds that this is another Zinj trap?"
"Possible, but not likely. The Duros monitoring of the battle in the asteroid belt and on Josaphet suggests that we're looking at a large force of Raptors fully engaged, not just the whispers and rumors we're used to. We'll launch as soon as we drop into the system. Pole Arms A-Wings will take point and make the initial flyover on Josaphet 4. Rogue Squadron and Nova's B-Wings will head into the asteroid belt to begin purging it of Zinj forces. Wraith Squadron will escort shuttles of New Republic ground forces into Josaphet 4. "That's it," Wedge said. "Your astromechs and nav computers have your navigational data. Good luck."
One by one, the rogues formed up a kilometer from Munramanda. Taldira's astromech transmitted the unit's course to his navigation system, and he absently reviewed numbers he would never use.
"Rogue meters group, on my count. 10, 9, 8.
Taldira reached up to flip the switch, setting his S-foils to combat formation. They parted, and his targeting computer came online.
3.
Taldira heeled over so his weapons aimed straight at the rear end of Wedge's X-Wing.
2. Leader, break off!
Horn's voice. Taldira, jolted by the interruption, fired. Before his shot was completely lined up, Wedge, impossibly, was already reacting to Horn's warning, breaking to starboard. But Taldira was rewarded by the sight of his lasers chewing through the port rear of Wedge's X-Wing, blowing one fusel thrust engine completely off, punching deep into the rear fuselage. The comm system was suddenly loud with many voices, most of them distressed. Wedge's snub fighter continued banking to starboard and lost relative altitude, and Tycho was keeping pace with him, as only the most experienced of wingmen could. Taldira smiled. This would be a challenge. Good. Nawara then, Twi'lek executive officer for Rogue Squadron, sat on the room's only chair, while Dr. Gast stretched out on the bed, leaning back against the wall. "And you're in a position to speak for the New Republic," Gast said. Then nodded.
"I have been so authorized by the Inner Council. And as soon as we can come to some arrangement, you can be free of all this."
His gesture took in the tiny, plain stateroom that served as Gast's cell. "Well, you know what I want. 1,000,000 credits, free of tax. Amnesty for all crimes known and unknown that I am alleged to have committed. And a new identity."
"No,"
Venn said.
"We can offer amnesty for all crimes you offer all details on. If you hold something back, it remains live. And we can offer 100,000 credits. Enough for you to make a good start for yourself, but you're not going to be wealthy at the expense of the New Republic. Every credit we give you could mean the life of one of our people."
"Every detail I give you could mean the life of 10 of your people," she said. "I'll buy into the full confession thing, but 1,000,000 credits stands." There was a sound beyond the door, an unmistakable one. 2 blasts in quick succession, 2 scrapes and thuds as bodies hit the floor. Ben stood. He grabbed the side of Gast's bed and yanked, precipitating her to the floor. He shoved the bed over on her, then slid to stand beside the door. "Hey," she said. The bed rocked as she struggled to free herself. The door slid open. A blaster, gripped in a large hand, entered first. Ben grabbed the blaster, twisted it up. He had a brief glimpse of the man he was wrestling with, big and fleshy with red hair. Then burning liquid washed into his eye. He yelped, instinctively turned away from the pain. A meaty fist slammed into his jaw, knocking him to the floor. He shook his head to clear it, belatedly realizing that it was hot calf in his face. Above him, the attacker looked at the wriggling bed and fired into it. 2x, 3x, 4... There was a female shriek in the middle of that. Then the assassin turned to aim down at Ben. Ben kicked out, shoving against the bed frame, and slid out partway into the hall. The assassin's shot struck the flooring between his legs. Ben found himself between the 2 door guards, both slumped dead. He grabbed at the blaster pistol still in the hand of the one to his left. He brought it around, even as he saw the assassin aiming. Ben fired. The shot took the assassin right in the nose, snapping his head back, filling the chamber with burned flesh odor. Ben rose. There was no more wiggling going on behind the bed. Knowing what he was likely to see, he pulled the bed from against the wall and looked at what lay beyond. Talvira smiled as he heard the pure tone of a good targeting lock on Wedge's X-Wing. But the noise garbled as Tycho slid in between target and prey. Tycho's voice came back.
"Row 5. Power down all weapon systems and return to Mon Ramonta immediately, or we will be forced to regard you as an enemy and destroy you."
"I am not the enemy. Wells and Tilly's, the one-leg-hopping maniac, is the enemy. Selfu, clear my field of fire."
Caldera checked his sensor board. Wedge's maneuver was leading him back and around toward Rogue 9. In just a few moments, he would be forced to run a head-to-head against Horn. Caldera shrugged. He could take the Corellian pilot. He could take anyone. Far ahead, Rogue 9 fired. There was a brilliant flash from behind Wedge. He glanced at his flickering sensor board. Rogue 5 was gone. In other circumstances, he would have had words of praise for such accurate shooting, but no rogue would accept praise for downing one of their own. Wedge felt sick. When he spoke, he was not surprised to find that his voice was raspy with his efforts to keep his emotions in check.
"Rogue 9, are you fit to fly?"
There was a moment's delay.
"Fit, sir."
"Rogue 2, take the group in. You're in command. I'm going to swap out X-Wings and rejoin you."
"Yes, sir."
Tycho didn't sound any less pained than Wedge. "Thanks, too."
"You're welcome, leader. Rogues, Novas, form up on me."
Tycho banked away, and Corrin moved up in formation with him. The mission, which had begun a disaster, ended a disaster. but not for Solo's forces. The A-wings of Polearm Squadron identified and strafed numerous sites of Raptor activity on the ground at Jussefit 4. Soldiers, deposited by shuttles with air support provided by Wraith Squadron, overran and took the Raptor base camp near the Jussefit capital. Rogue and Nova squadrons cruised through the asteroid belt, wreaking havoc on the sparse units Zinge's forces had deployed. No words of thanks came via comm from the Jussefit defenders. Small wonder, since this was an imperial world, its defenders doubtless looking on their liberators with as much suspicion as gratitude. But most of the starfighters picked up anonymous transmissions expressing thanks, sometimes wrapped in profanity directed against the New Republic. Wedge, bone-weary, and not from the hours he'd spent in the cockpit, had the rogues lined up for a final approach to Mon Ramonda when the word came.
Sensors show an Imperial Star Destroyer leaving hyperspace and entering Jussefit system.
Thanks, Bridge. Rogues, form up on me. We'll cruise out that direction. A few minutes later, a new voice took the comm. Solos.
Rogue, return to Mon Ramonda. Star Destroyer Agonizer is communicating. They want to have a face-to-face with you, Rogue Leader.
Wedge raised an eyebrow. Interesting. I guess I'd better go over and see what they want.
Negative, negative. You're too likely a prospect for assassination. Me too. I've transmitted a recommendation that Captain Anomo make the visit. Wait a second.
Solo was gone for nearly a minute.
They didn't like that idea, probably because he's Mon Calamari. They're willing to accept someone out of your squadron.
Wedge ran a roster review in his mind. His rogues were bone-tired, and he really needed to gauge their reaction to Caldera's death and find out what had led up to it. I think Face Lauren will satisfy their requirements. Face had been part of a mission that had landed aboard a Star Destroyer before, in his case, the Super Star Destroyer Iron Fist. But then he'd been in disguise, an apparent ally of the people he was visiting. This time he came as an enemy under temporary truce. And he could feel his heart rate increase as his X-Wing rose into the hangar bay in the underside of the gigantic vessel. As he climbed down the ladder from his cockpit, an Imperial Naval Lieutenant bowed to him.
Captain Lauren, the Admiral is waiting.
Two halls and two turbo lifts later, the lieutenant led Face into a conference room. The oval table overflowed with food. Cooked dishes, platters of fresh fruit, containers of wine. Struck by the ostentatiousness of it, Face laughed before he could check himself. The room's sole occupant, a lean man, clean-shaven, of graying middle age, rose and approached, his hand out.
Admiral Terran Rogress.
Garrick Loren, Captain, New Republic Starfighter Command. Face shook his hand. The Admiral gestured for Face to sit at the food-laden table.
Please, help yourself. Protocol demands I put it out, so we should eat it. But I won't keep you long. Time presses for me, as I'm sure it does for you.
Following Face's lead, he sat.
What I'm going to tell you is entirely unofficial. Make announcements about it, transmit queries to us along official lines, and we'll denounce it as typical rebel lies. On the other hand, it does come down from the highest levels.
Go ahead, Face said.
Our differences, Imperial and Rebel, are not going to go away. We'll be enemies until we die.
Probably.
But we have a mutual enemy. I am, in a sense, the counterpart of your General Solo.
You lead a task force whose goal is to get rid of Zinge.
Rogress nodded. Once we're done with him, we can go back to our very personal ideological differences without having to invite anyone else to play. What do you think?
I think it's a grand idea, Admiral. But I can't speak even unofficially for the New Republic or even for this fleet. All I'm authorized to do is listen and to report what I hear to my commanders.
Rogress smiled. If I receive a transmission from General Solo directed personally to me conveying any message whatsoever, then I will take it that you agree.
And then what? and then I transmit to you every piece of recorded data we have on Zinge's campaigns. And I'd expect a similar transmission from you. Each of us may know something about our mutual enemy that the other can exploit. Face nodded. An interesting notion. And if it became officially known, you'd be executed for collaboration with the enemy. Rogris nodded cheerfully. As might your General Solo. But that's a worst-case possibility. Best case is that Zinge dies. True. Face stood. One last question before I leave. Why are Baron Fell and the 181st working with Zinge? The Admiral's face lost most of its good cheer. I can't guess about Fell's motives. He defected to your side, then was gone for some years. Now he's defected from the rebels to someone new. He's a compulsive traitor, I'd say. But I'll tell you this. He's not in charge of the 181st.
How's that?
The real 181st is still serving the Empire with loyalty and skill. Fell has assembled new pilots, called them the 181st, and slapped some red stripes on their starfighters to duplicate the fighter group's colors.
Interesting. Thank you for your candor.
Rogris nodded. He gestured at the tabletop. Would you care to pack a lunch before you go?
Face laughed.
In the hours of what would have been night on Coruscant, the timing by which Mon Ramonda's activities were scheduled, Solo and Wedge met in the General's office. Are you going to accept Rogris's offer? Wedge asked. Solo nodded. Pending confirmation by Fleet Command? No, I have very broad powers regarding the search for Zinge. Solo quirked a self-deprecating smile. Until they decide that I've completely failed, I'm still a very important man. Solo's smile faded. Whatever this Twi'lek madness is, it's spreading, he said. A little before the assassination attempt against you, Counselor Mon Mothma was nearly killed by her bodyguard, a Gotal. She's badly injured. In the hours after that, there were two incidents of shooting sprees by Gotal soldiers, one in a barracks hall frequented mostly by humans, and one in a holo theater. Dozens died.
Wedge shook his head.
Do you have anything on the cafeteria worker?
Gaily.
Solo grimaced. No known motivation, which means probably money. No sign of contact with insurgents or enemies. But he's the key. The fact that he was sent to kill Gast means that he was working for Zinge. The fact that he was seen speaking to Taldira means that he was involved with him, and therefore with the whole supposed Twi'lek conspiracy, which makes it a certainty that Zinge is behind that, too. Solo took a deep breath. Unfortunately, our knowing that doesn't mean that everybody understands it. I have one more piece of news. Very, very unfortunate news. It was a few hours later. Wedge looked at the three good people he'd assembled and prepared to give them what might have been the grossest insult he could offer. Nawara Venn gave him a close, evaluative look. It was obvious to Wedge that he knew something bad was up. It was harder for him to read Diapasic's face. His chief mechanic, Koi Kumad, looked unsure. "I have orders from the Provisional Council," Wedge said. "The effect on our immediate group is that I'm obliged to take you three temporarily off active duty." Nawara Venn nodded as though this were what he expected.
"It's because we're Twi'leks," he said.
"I'm afraid so." Koi's voice climbed a register in indignation.
"I don't believe this."
"Believe it," Dia said. "It's fleet-wide, isn't it, Commander?"
Wedge nodded.
"So much for the human promises of equality among the species," Koi said.
Her voice was bitter.
"You know how many civilian jobs for a lack of money I've turned down? I stayed with you because the rogues were the spearhead of the cause I wanted to support. A galaxy where species didn't matter. Now that's gone."
"It's not gone," Wedge said. "It's taken a body blow, but it's not dead." He turned to Dia. "How are you doing, Pasek?"
"The Provisional Council has just announced to all the New Republic that I'm not worthy."
Her red eyes flashed for a moment.
"Fortunately, their opinion is worth nothing next to my squadmates.
I think I'll go keep company with them. I'd do that any day rather than slum with the Provisional Council.
She saluted and followed Cody out of the office. Nawara then said,
"That was a lot of insolence for you not to dress her down."
Wedge gave a slight shrug.
"I feel almost the same way she does. I just can't believe Talbira turning against us the way he did. What would cause him..."
Wedge's eyes opened wider.
"Cause? Effect? What's the cause and what's the effect?" "I'm not following you." "It didn't matter whether Admiral Akbar died or Mon Mothma. Their assassins were successful."
"What?
No, they weren't." "Yes, they were. Koi Komad was their first victim."
Wedge stood. "Get the wraiths together. We're going to conduct one of their insane speculation and planning sessions. Pilot's lounge, and invite any rogues who want to attend. As usual with Zinj, we have to dig one level farther down." He was in the corridor before Ven had a chance to rise to his feet. All the wraiths were there, and so were Tycho, Hobby, and Corin Horn of the rogues. "So, we know about a sudden rise in terrorist activity by Twi'lek," Wedge said without preamble. "And we've determined to our own satisfaction that Zinj is behind them. Why is Zinj doing this?"
"To hurt the New Republic," Kel said. "Losing Admiral Akbar and Mon Mothma would be a serious blow."
Wedge took a seat and nodded. "Sure it would, and they'd be replaced by people who probably aren't quite as good as they are at their tasks. Not exactly a masterstroke on Zinj's part." He leaned forward, still oddly intent. "This morning, at 600 hours, I was obliged to relieve every Twi'lek aboard Mon Ramonda of active duty, and that, I think, is what Zinj wanted."
"To be rid of our Twi'leks?" Kel asked.
Wedge shook his head, but it was Horn who spoke up.
"Suddenly, the Twi'leks are second-class citizens. Rumor has it that the Goatals will be next, because of the attempt on Mon Mothma's life and the follow-up shootings."
Lara said, "Twi'leks and Goatals don't make up much of a percentage of the New Republic armed forces. I mean, their loss is important, sure, but it's not going to cripple the fleet."
"It'll cripple the entire New Republic," Wedge said. "Right now, it's one species making up a fraction of 1% of the New Republic population. But we suddenly have a precedent that divides them from the New Republic."
Dono saw the wraiths and rogues looking among themselves as the idea took root. He drew a breath. "Until this attack on you, sir, and on Dr. Gast, we had no real reason to believe that it was Zinj's work."
"Correct," Wedge said. "But in trying to kill us under the same umbrella of this false conspiracy story, he's shown his hand. What's Zinj's next step? If we can predict it, we can convince the Provisional Council that they're dealing with a methodical plan of Zinj's."
He looked among them.
"Otherwise, in 6 months, a year, the New Republic consists of humans on one side, non-humans on the other. No possible trust or interdependence between them. And Zinj can march in and take whatever he wants."
"I have a thought."
That was Piggy.
"A theory. We know for a certainty that Zinj has for some time been trying to create very intelligent examples of humanoids not known for their intelligence. The question, especially as it relates to your other theory, is why?"
"Obviously," Tycho said, "to have agents who could infiltrate those species and therefore not look out of place in locations where those species are found."
"Correct."
Piggy nodded in the exaggerated way of Gamorreans.
"But what does a leader require in an agent in addition to intelligence?"
"Loyalty," Lara said. Her voice seemed a little sad.
"Correct,"
Piggy said.
"What if Zinj found a way to instill loyalty by force rather than through training?"
"Like brainwashing."
Tycho's voice was flat, hard. He had at one time been suspected of being a brainwashed agent of Imperial Intelligence.
"Yes,"
Piggy said.
"But we know we are not facing brainwashing as we have experienced it before. From the time he joined Rogue Squadron, what was the longest time Talvira was out of sight of the other members? His longest leave?"
Tycho and Wedge conferred, and Tycho said,
About a day at a time.
One day.
Piggy nodded.
Then he was brainwashed in less than a day. Surely such a treatment must leave evidence on the body of the victim. Signs of probes, blood chemical imbalances from drug treatments, neurological disorders, something.
Unfortunately, Wedge said, we don't have Taldira's body to examine.
If only Dr. Gast had survived,
Piggy said.
I wish we had the knowledge she possessed.
Wedge and Nora then exchanged a glance.
We'll have to do without, Wedge said.
All right, let's get to work on these theories of ours and see whether we can have successful careers as prophets as well as pilots.
It drifted off the bow of Iron Fist, a nightmare vessel. Her bulk was an irregular oval of wreckage more than 3 kilometers long, held together by thousands of kilometers of cabling. The name, barely visible on the bow, was Second Death.
Ugliest ship I think I've ever seen, said Zinge.
His face shone with admiration.
Nerva, you have done a magnificent job.
The general gave him a little bow. There are a dozen explosive pockets within the body of the wreckage. They will send the components of Razor's Kiss out in all directions. There are more explosives in the engines and bridge, sufficient to remove most evidence that these extra components ever existed. It should be convincing. Zinge smiled. He hoped he'd never be forced to utilize the hideous amalgamation. Using it meant failure on his part, meant he'd been beaten and needed to hide to lick his wounds. But he liked to keep his options open.
What about the night cloak function?
Would you like a demonstration?
Please.
Melvar held up his comlink.
Second Death, this is General Melvar. Activate and initiate night cloak.
Tiny flares erupted from Second Death, four from the bow and four from the stern, deploying at precise angles, so they suggested the corners of a wireframe box surrounding the junkyard vessel. After a few moments of flight, the satellites ceased their acceleration, their burn trails vanished, and they became all but invisible in the starfield. And Second Death was suddenly gone. Where she had been, where the space around her had been, was blackness. Not starfield. Not even the stars were visible through it. Zinge offered a little exhalation of happiness.
Sensors, give me a reading on Second Death.
The sensor officer in the crew pit below examined his screen. He took on a stricken look.
Nothing, sir. We don't even get a return on the active sensors. It's a sensor anomaly. Fine. Fine.
Out in space, stars briefly flickered through the darkness, then shone brilliantly again, and Second Death once more floated before them.
In Mon Ramonda's pilot's lounge, dancers were already in motion on the portion of the floor the pilots had cleared of furniture. Face and Dia had center stage, moving to a classical theme of ancient Coruscant. And Donos and Lara were now advancing to join them.
They're not really together,
Dia said. Face glanced over at Donos and Lara.
How do you figure?
She's tense, keeping a little separation between them.
Oh, but you missed when she gave him the opportunity for a kiss. A deliberate invitation. It's...
Then Face stiffened, nearly losing the rhythm of the dance, and looked back at the other couple.
It's what?
Coruscant charm signing.
I don't know what that is.
It came out of Coruscant long before the rise of the Empire. But it's mostly confined to the Empire these days.
Anyway, she gave him the correct sign for I'd accept a kiss. He just didn't know what it meant.
Is that a reason for you to be so startled?
Well, yes.
Lara keeps saying Coruscant to me without meaning to. When she's distracted, when she's upset. Not when she's in control, Faith thought back. And then things she knows about Coruscant commerce. And that incident at the Galactic Museum, the old man who thought she was... What was the name he called her?
Adalia Monastir.
Faith looked at her with real surprise.
How did you remember that?
An old trick of the trade. When you're a slave dancer,
You remember the name of everyone you are introduced to, by your honor. She sighed as if releasing some sorrow into the air. What are you going to do about Lara? Ask her how she knows this charm signing? He shook his head, brushing his cheek against hers. I'm going to put in a request for information to New Republic Intelligence. But later, she said.
Later. At a late-day briefing of the Rogues and Wraiths, Wedge tapped keys on the lectern keyboard, and a holoprojection sprang into existence beside him. It showed a solar system, medium-sized yellow sun, and a dozen planets around it.
This is Kidriff system. We've recently received data on Kidriff and other Zinj-occupied worlds in Imperial Sector.
Wedge called up another image.
Kidriff 5's Tabaskan Sector. The seat of their rebel activity, which may or may not still exist. That's our target.
Jansen spoke up.
And what do we do there, Chief?
Very little, actually. Wedge brought up the image of a Corellian YT-1300 freighter.
This is not the Millennium Falcon.
It's our simulacrum, which Chewbacca and a few unlucky mechanics have been transforming into a likeness of the Falcon.
We've dubbed it the Millennium Falsehood. We're given to understand that it's approximately spaceworthy. Chewbacca and I pilot the Falsehood to Tabaskan Sector and land in one of the forest tracts. We'll let off a couple of intelligence operatives who are going to try to make contact with any surviving pro-New Republic factions there. But our main job is to wait there until we're seen, then take off for space. This allows the apparent Millennium Falcon to be seen well within Zinj's territory, on a world where Zinj knows there has been pro-rebel activity. We all know what special animosity Zinj feels for Han Solo. So, we think that this piece of data will pique his interest. We're going to do this again and again. At a certain point, when the Falcon has developed a predictable pattern of mission activity, Zinj will, we hope, show up to destroy it.
Wedge looked among the seated pilots.
We'll be taking out targets of opportunity on Kidriff 5, mostly enemy starfighters, on the way out. Our mission is to disengage with as little loss as possible. Any questions? No? Tomorrow morning we'll get the final flight data, drop out of hyperspace outside the Kidriff system, and execute this thing.
It was long after the Rogues and Wraiths settled into their parking orbit around Kidriff's moon that Face remembered his unread mail. First was a letter, text only, from his sister. A bright bit of home to distract him from the bleak lunar escape that was his sole viewing pleasure right now. The second and last item was from New Republic Intelligence, regarding his recent query concerning Lara Notzel and Adalia Monothea, the name she'd been called by the old man on Coruscant. The file on Lara Notzel contained little information he didn't already know. Much of it she told him and the other Wraiths at one time or another.
Then the file on Adalia Monothea, born about 50 years ago, trained to be an actress. She'd caught the eye of Armand Isard, head of intelligence throughout most of the reign of Emperor Palpatine. Monothea had trained as an intelligence agent and had executed many successful missions for her superiors. Then, according to this account, she had been arrested and convicted of treason, along with her husband. Both were executed for funneling information about Imperial intelligence to anti-Imperial factions. Face found the link to data on Monothea's immediate family and brought it up. There was not much of interest there on her husband. He had a history similar to hers. There were rumors that the two of them had had a child, but there was no data on file about this. But far more interesting than the husband's history was his name. Dolls Petethel. Face felt his stomach sink. In the graying hour of dawn on Kidriff 5, the police floater heeled over so far that Wedge was certain that its pilot would tumble out of his seat, if not for strap restraints. The pilot looked down at the Millennium Falsehood, reached for his control board as if to activate his comm system, then spotted Tycho's X-Wing. Even with the distance between them, Wedge could read the shock on the pilot's face.
Wedge gave his sensor board a glance. A strong signal, a blur representing six or more starfighters, appeared to the north, closing fast.
There we go, Wedge said. Let's bounce out.
Tycho said,
consider it bounced.
His X-Wing rose and vectored straight for space. Wedge hauled back on the controls, and the falsehood followed. On Lara's sensor screen, the cloud of TIE fighters suddenly became bigger, more diffuse, then resolved itself into seven wing pairs and one trio of starfighters.
Group, this is Rogue 9.
She could almost recognize Corin Horn's vocal characteristics in the calm, distorted words.
Break by pairs and fire at will.
Faith immediately decelerated, dropping behind the rest of the group. Confused, Lara stayed tucked in behind his starboard. Rate 1, 2, what's our tactic? Face was a moment in replying.
You'll see,
he said. The other rogues and wraiths fired a column of red lasers that passed harmlessly around the falsehood and her escort, but with less delicacy through the oncoming TIEs. Lara saw one fighter ignite and blow apart. Surely Face would now dive into the main body of the fight. But he didn't. He circled around the periphery of the battle. Frowning, Lara followed. She knew her duty even when she didn't understand it. But she wondered, and her confusion gradually turned to cold worry. Seven fighters of the combined TIE pursuit force were destroyed before the pursuing squad leader ordered an evacuation. The surviving TIEs fled planetward. Donos responded to Wedge's order that the group form up on the Millennium Falsehood, but on his sensor board, Wraith 1 and Wraith 2 maintained their distance, paralleling the main group's course a dozen kilometers out.
Wraith 1, Wraith 2, rejoin the group and prepare for jump.
Face's voice was next.
Leader, this is Wraith 1. We need to jump from here and follow you in. Explain that, Wraith 1. On a private channel, if you please, leader.
Lara's worry turned into fear. There were only so many reasons Face would refuse to let them return. He was protecting the group or someone in the group. And Lara was certain she knew who. He was protecting Wedge from her. Face's voice was off the comm waves for a couple of minutes. Then he returned.
Wraith 2, have you double-checked your nav course?
No, she said. You know, don't you? Face. Her voice emerged as a choked whisper, and she wondered if the comm unit would even pick it up.
I know that you're Kara Penethil,
he said. His voice was quieter, more gentle than she expected it to be. She felt a sensation of loss, of the sudden departure from her life of everything she considered important. But she also felt a sudden relief, an absence of the weight she'd been carrying around since first she decided she no longer wanted to serve Zinj. Since she decided that her alliance with the Wraiths was fact, not fiction. I never betrayed you, Lara said. She was surprised at how calm her voice sounded.
Lara, I'm sorry,
Faith said.
I have to place you under arrest, pending investigation of this whole mess. Power your weapon systems down. Don't attempt any sudden maneuvers.
Understood, sir. I'm complying with your orders.